The amount of global social media managers from all around the world who have diverse bilingual talents is vast. Like the global social media game, it's out of this world. So I would just say, expand your mind.
The stigma, that's where it comes from. Make sure you have your ducks in a row. Be organized. Be professional when you reach out to people. Follow up. Do what you're going to say you're going to do. That's really what business is about.
You're listening to Untamed, a podcast dedicated to empowering you, the lash artist, while providing insights on how to achieve success that is as individual and unique as you are. Each episode, me, Cheryl,
and me, Anne Marie, share our best information openly, without reservation. We discuss challenges, best practices, and what the future holds for the lash industry.
So grab a snack and your comfiest sweater and get ready to geek out with your new lash BFFs. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe.
Hey, Lash friends. Welcome back to the Untamed podcast. This is Anne Marie, and today Roxy and Tiana are back with us. This is going to be an open and raw conversation on the role diversity plays in the lash industry. So welcome back, Roxy and Tiana.
Hi. Hey.
Thank you guys for joining me today. I feel like you guys are this power duo in the lash industry, and I absolutely love to see it. Can you guys start by letting us know a little bit about what's been most valuable in your careers?
I would say respect. One of the biggest values for starting my career was always to just go into it with the idea that I'm going to treat people how I want to be treated. That goes for my clients, that goes for the customers that I serve, that goes for the students that I teach. And so I really carried that through my career and getting my journey started. And it really has like impacted how I do things, my mission, why I do things. And so when Roxy and I, our paths crossed, she actually was a customer in my retail store, Young Rox, just coming in, just bright-eyed and so ambitious. It definitely, and I've had so many customers that I've been blessed to meet and work with who are just, they're so ambitious. And that is something that really like impacted my journey and just wanting to take it as far as I could in the industry, in the lash industry specifically. And so when Roxy and I really started collaborating, she started renting in my studio. I saw how truly ambitious she was to get into education. And she would always say, I'm going to have a school. And you know, when people say things, you just give them a thumbs up. That's what you do. You don't know.
I didn't know how
serious she was. She's pregnant and she's saying this. I'm like, well, you're going to have a baby. You know, it's kind of a wild ride ahead of you. Myself having two kids, you know, being a young mother, just watching her journey, it really inspired me. And it like, not to date myself, I have been in the industry like 12 years, but to not date myself while dating myself, it really kind of took me back to, you know, at the beginning of my career, just how truly ambitious I was. Still ambitious, but just ambitious in a totally different, in a different way. So seeing people like Roxy kind of take the vision and the mission to bring it to our communities. And when we say our communities, primarily where we're located and the audience and the community we serve is women of color all throughout Texas. Texas is a very diverse place. Dallas specifically is like just the biggest melting pot. And I'm not from here. Roxy is from Texas. So for me coming here, it was just really refreshing to be able to see that collaboration and that diversity and inclusion all come together, and especially in the lash industry.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that throughout my journey, and something that I really learned just being as an entrepreneur is how much collaboration is so impactful to your business. And so once I stumbled into the Lash Exchange, like, let's be honest, the energy that you have to experience it, it's only something to experience, like the atmosphere, the energy that Tiana has really put into her shop. You could really feel that. At that time, it was just like, okay, this industry is such a baby. There's no one doing education at the level that Tiana is doing. And I'm like, she is really serious. Like, she does a whole pastry platter, like she'll feed lunch, manuals. I'm like, she is really customer service wise, like cream of the crop. those are definitely things that are pillars in just how I move. And I kind of just felt that. And I was like, you know, Tiana has a really good heart. Like, she will do anything for you. Girls coming into the lash exchange and they are asking how to make a fan, asking all questions about the adhesive. And she was just like really serving the community. And, you know, that is really what inspired me to open DFW Lash University. It's actually called Diverse for Women. Like, that's what it really stands for, not Dallas Fort Worth. But people just assumed it was for that. And explaining that, they're just not going to get it. So I think now that we have kind of like built the brand and we've already shown that that's what we have been about since day one, is like a perfect time to like really start bringing the pieces together. That's how we got here.
This is a beautiful journey. And I think both of you just stand out so much in this industry and have made huge waves. And it's something that I really admire about both of you. The respect, that was a really big pillar you guys mentioned, continuity of care to the customers and serving the community and giving back in that way. Now, Roxy, you said that DFW doesn't stand for Dallas Fort Worth and it stands for Diverse for Women. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and also why you don't feel wanting to keep educating people on that actually being the name?
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, people in the industry, like the industry has so much growing to do. I really feel like we need to actually start putting more thought into the diversity that we have within our industry and making sure that it's equal opportunity. They're constantly doing research and reaching out to the people that are making a change, who are new, who are about their business. And I just feel like it's not a fact that I don't want to put it out there. I just feel like we had to really just show and prove before we're just like, oh, we're diverse for women. Like, are you really though? And it's like, yes, we really are. So that's what we're about. Yeah. And I just think that it's time for the diversity to really be shown, especially when it comes to like paid speaker gigs and that type of stuff. Like, if you really, let's get to the real, like this industry was super young about 4, 8, 10 years ago. So it was really built on those friendships and those people that are in control of these types of things. But I just feel like now there's no reason why people should be like reaching out to you and trying to come and have you be a speaker or do any type of thing where they're asking for your time that they're not willing to pay for it. And I really just believe that that is kind of where we're at. And that's where the diversity kind of lacks. And then just collaborations, like that's also where it lacks. I just feel like a lot of people are just not as organized as they think in the lash industry as well. And I just feel like how you handle your business, how you communicate back to one another, like all those things have to be taken in account for. Yeah, I think that's where we can definitely improve.
I definitely agree with you that there's a lot of room for improvement. It's just barely scratching the surface. It's like the bare minimum happening right now. And even not even that's always being reached by a lot of different people in the industry. I do think that the Diverse for Women is an incredible thing that I would love to see on your page more, really promoting that, because DFW Lash University is the first lash university or school in the state of Texas that's focused on this, that's focused on taking women of any background and helping uplift them, teach them that they have a path, they have a career, teaching them how to money management, teaching them how to set up for success. So I think that's something that's really, really beautiful and something you need to just keep screaming from the rooftops. And I'm happy to scream it with you.
Yeah, something that Roxy, my partnering with DLU in the beginning phases, we had so many challenges to overcome when it came to the side of DLU that is licensing through the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation. There are parameters that need to be met. There are checks and balances that have to be arranged and accounted for. So there is that whole side of it. And my brain being, you know, more analytical, I'm creative, but you know, there's the side of my brain that's super regimented. It was like, okay, Roxy, we have to get this going. This is what we need to get going in order to offer this program, in order to give a great experience to the students. And she was always pressing for all of these other pieces of content, information, collaborations. I mean, we've had money managers when the program was, you know, when we were curating that in-person experience with the students, remember we had the money manager come in, talk about investments and things. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, we have to get these gals to pass the test. And Roxy's like, we also have to get them to, you know, where they're going to be successful.
Right.
And so that's kind of where I came around to, okay, we've got the licensing program up. We're putting hundreds, yes, indeed, hundreds of students through the program. And that's kind of where my individual products came into play of realizing, okay, we've curated all this excellent content for teaching them how to lash, teaching them how to pass their tests. And I wanted to create content that was really, truly beyond just the technical skills, because I really realized that our audience and our community that we serve, in order for them to be truly successful, they need the full package. That's with diversity as well. In order to be successful as a lash artist and as a lash brand, like with UA, what you guys have found, you have to cast a wide net. You have to represent the community that you want to serve. And if you want to serve just a very small section of community, then your brand can reflect a very small section of the community. But if you want to serve the masses and truly the wide spectrum that is the beauty industry, diversity is so incredibly important. You know, working with brands like UA, working with DLU, it's really important. It's important to me that I work with brands that reflect those values.
Well, thank you for that. It's definitely a journey for us. And being owned by Cheryl, who is also a woman of color, I find that kind of helps a bit, especially in that Asian demographic for us.
Yeah.
But it's more than that. I think that one thing at UA that I was just thinking about last night was actually just how the team is so full of like love and compassion. And that's just where we are at our core. So it's very easy for this team to share love and to want to listen and to want to make others feel seen, heard, appreciated, and loved. Ultimately, I feel like we're like the love brand.
Sounds silly, but it's really
letting everyone know that like you have a unique place. You're powerful, you're beautiful as you are, and your success is as individual as you are. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Now, I have a lot that I want to ask you both on this topic. I just want to start with, you mentioned that kind of like some people want to cast that net wider and kind of show different diversity. But this is controversial. Not everyone does. And what is your take on that?
I just think that they're missing out, like Tana's saying, like they're just missing out on a whole demographic. Potential customers, but that's their business. I really feel like don't use us in the marketing and stuff like that, but don't create opportunity for us. Like that's where it is really like, okay, you're showing that you're for us and all that type of stuff, but how many people do you have that is on your team that looks like me? You know, like really actually breathing, living it, not just trying to use it as a strategy to make more money.
Yeah, I think there's an element which, like Anne-Marie said, can be controversial of tokenism, to where we're obviously from a marketing perspective, this is what we're putting out and, you know, is externally projected. But I always say this, you can't really change people's intention and you really can't change what's in people's hearts. And it all starts so internally. You have to have a true understanding and true value of an expanding in a diverse manner, expanding your personal social circle in a diverse manner. You know, talking to people from different backgrounds and different experiences is, again, going to completely shape and transform the way that you move. And if you don't have those perspectives, if you don't have those relationships, it does limit you. It really, really does. And I found that when it comes to business, we're a global industry. We're not even talking just the US. Like that's one thing that I think that's hard for people in the US if they haven't really like traveled around. It's like there is a whole actual world.
Thank you.
out
so beautiful.
There. And a lot of the products, hello, like they're not, you know, USA made.
Right.
We are a industry that relies on globalization. We're an industry that thrives on diversity. There's different statistics throughout, you know, relating to the beauty industry that women of color, people of color are one of the major demographic spenders, maybe the top demographic spender when it comes to beauty, the $1 billion beauty industry. I mean, when Roxy tells me some of her beauty endeavors and just like how much they cost and how much time is allocated to maybe hair or whatever else that is specific to her, it's like that is a significant spend. So in my head, I look at the lash industry as one of the singular industries, not necessarily like hair, because hair per ethnicity is pretty segmented, right? We're going to see Asian hair. There's a different way of handling that. My hair is different than Roxy's hair, different from your hair. So it's right. Like, okay, hair can be ethnically kind of separated, but things like nails, things like lashes, skincare would even be another thing that I think it takes a lot of specialization to understand how different all of our skin is in terms of skincare. But lashes is one of those things that we can serve everyone if we take the time and intention to do so and to master our skills and to diversify our craft. We can have a diverse audience of clients who we can serve to, you know, top tier service. So that's something I think from just the lash artist standpoint of your business, and this is something I preach in my courses like crazy, is just having that experience and diving into that. And that can really change the trajectory of your whole career. It did for me. Having my first African client, like actual African client, was like just such a nerve-wracking experience because I wanted to do good, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to give her the same level of service that I could give my Asian clients because I started doing lashes mostly on Asian people. So here, that's my skill set. But knowing that in order to really grow my business and truly consider myself a master, I think we throw that word around so much, master of the craft, that we can serve all clients equitably. And if we cannot do that, or if we are not focused on doing that, again, we're selling ourselves short. And I think lash companies, in terms of suppliers, in terms of brands, really should take that into account as well.
I completely agree. Now, there's two things that I hear reoccurring as a very quick defense. And some of you listening might have had this pop in your head. And there is no judgment if you're still listening, going through this episode with us. I do want to address two things that I hear often as like the pushback on this from brands, from solo lash artists is my team is small. I can't be diverse with the team of three. And then also my demographic in my area is white. What would you say to stylists or brand owners who have those thoughts?
I think that you should probably put more effort in finding those people to fill those jobs if diversity is something that you want. If, like, mm-hmm. if you want to be inclusive.
And to Roxy's point, especially with the DLU team, when we were working really intensively on curating a team internally, sourcing team members and looking for talented people, we were going global. Mm-hmm. Like we, again, if you are saying your area is so singular in its demographic, and this can go for any demographic, you're saying, okay, well, this is where I am. This is the four walls of my life look like this. I would say you are looking down, not up. The world that we have access to with technology, you've got to be crazy not to think that people from all around the world, there are sourcing programs for this. There is fantastic opportunities for globalization, even in your small business through contractors, through whomever. That, I mean, that's the move. The DLU team is very small. And there are people from all around the US and the world mm-hmm. on the DLU team, guys. And that is through the use of technology. That is through the use of ingenuity and thinking outside the box. And again, doing what you can with what you have. And I think you'll find that globalization is, if you haven't already figured it out, it is actually the move. That's kind of what I would say in terms of that. If you are looking to build your team of only people from your actual zip code, then maybe you're selling yourself short.
Yeah.
And, you know, putting yourself in a position that is going to be challenging to grow. I'm not saying don't give people jobs in the US. I'm just saying like certain things that you might, like social media. For one, social media, that's a huge one. We're all, oh, social media. We need so much help with social media. Help, help, help. The amount of global social media managers from all around the world who have diverse bilingual talents is vast. Like the global social media game, it's out of this world. So I would just say, expand your mind.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask the questions that people are too afraid to ask or to say.
Bring them on.
So you guys are open to it. I'm going to keep it rolling. The next one I have is circling back to something Roxy said earlier, which is like paid opportunities. Can you speak a little bit more on why equity is so important and what that really means? For example, like how some people get paid for opportunities, others don't. I just want to hear more of your perspective on this topic.
I think that is so important because that is how you really create motivation and inspiration. Like, how are people supposed to inspire to do and to conquer and quest if they don't see anybody that looks like them? I just think that everybody's time is really, really valuable. I just feel like everything's so based off of friendship and social media, but there comes a point in time where you just have to pay people for their time if you think that they're expert or you want their time. Really, right. I think with all the inflation, I think it's just if you want their time. I don't think they have to say nothing. Like, really, just for them to be there in this day and age, like, time is really, really valuable. I feel like the days have gotten shorter, and I feel like we're all really struggling with things that are going on day to day. Everything's mm-hmm. constantly changing. And it's just, everybody's working harder to have this quality of life. I just feel like, you know, now it's come the time for everybody to put their money where their mouth is. Like, I definitely do that. You know, when it comes to Tiana's time and her expertise and all the things that we've had to build in film and training and all the stuff that she put in place for DLU, documents, a whole ClickUp, whole my mural boards, like we've been mind mapping. She's been having me doing exercises and stuff. Like, I had to pay for that time, you know, and I just feel like, especially if you're asking for somebody to leave their business, their family, their responsibilities to come for multiple days, I just feel like, and you get to use their likeliness. Like, I feel like that's definitely worth somebody's time. You know, you should at least ask them. Like, I think gone are the days. Like, if somebody is really, really that person that you want to hear from and you know that audience, it can reach more people, then that is the exchange.
Right. This is something really interesting to me because as someone who's done a lot of free work in my career, how do you balance being paid and knowing that you're worthy of being paid for this opportunity versus doing something complimentary or for free that would be beneficial to your career? How do you categorize that to know what is the opportunity worth taking unpaid versus standing your ground and saying, hey, no, listen, I should be paid for this?
I mean, it's definitely, you know, I know when I want to help out, chip in, put our efforts together.
That gut feeling.
Yeah, I know. If I'm down, get dirty, I got to, you know, I'm going to take some of my resources. I'm mm-hmm. in this for a better cause. I get that. Mm-hmm. But when you are talking about money being made and a lot of things going on, I have to be there. That is where it's like, okay. There's an exchange that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. I'll repost it though. Do you always get a repost out of me? You know, I'm always reposting everybody's stuff on DLU's page because it's just like, why not?
Right.
These people that are entering the industry on our page, they're brand new. You know, that's the least I can do for the community. That's why we do our Instagram lives. Like that, mm-hmm. that is where I feel like I can be very impactful at a low cost, low energy, still show up for my business and my community. And we can just talk, you know, chop it up for 30 minutes.
Yeah, Roxy does a really great job with that. Mm-hmm. I think creators and brands and people seeking these opportunities and wanting to be seen for these opportunities really have to take into account how they're representing themselves. I talk about this a lot. Like, if you want to be paid, you want to be treated like a business, you want to be valued in terms of what you're bringing to the table, you need to put that on front. Like, you need to put that right up front. You need to have analytics. You need to have an email list developed. Like, that's my thing with the collaborations and the people asking for things. Roxy's really generous with the reposts. I'm kind of more like, You know, that's like real estate, you know, like that's the audience that I've curated. And I need to make sure that that opportunity is really of a value to my audience. And so I think, especially for the community we serve and those very ambitious people that want these opportunities and should be, you know, extended those opportunities, really have to be intentional about how they're representing themselves, how they're putting their content out there, and expert positioning themselves for those opportunities. Because again, we have to build our own value.
Yes.
I think that's something. Mm-hmm. We have to build our own value. We have to represent our own value. And then when somebody steps to us with an opportunity, we need to know what our time is worth, what the opportunity is worth. Like I'm a very equative person. Like, you know, like this is my value. This is your value. This is the end goal. Let's do a little equation and figure out how much effort I am to put into this, that, the other thing. But like to Roxy's point, like here we are, and I've said this on other podcasts too, like here we are gassing people up. We're talking about we're a $1 billion industry. We are a six figure yeah. artist and rut ta ta. It's like, okay, well, I think that if you're a $1 million business or $1 million, you know, event organizer, that there probably should be a plan in place and a budget in place for how you want to compensate people. And then also making sure that, okay, this is a good investment for my event. This is right. a good investment. This person has 10 toes down in their audience, and their audience is really going to align with the type of event that we're having. And this is the value that it's really going to bring to this person's audience, and really being artful in the way that we align with one another, I think it's like a hugely misunderstood thing in the lash industry. Like Roxy was saying, it's like homegirl energy. We've talked about this on that other podcast. We're friends, but like, don't you want your friend to be able to like buy groceries and like have a good lifestyle? If we're friends, shouldn't you respect my business as much as I'm respecting your business and the type of event or whatever you're trying to put on? So for me, it goes both ways. We as a community need to stand up, stand out, and really get organized in terms of the types of opportunities that we want to see, and also create those opportunities, of course, within our communities. That's something that Roxy and I are really plotting on, because we have a great community in Dallas and in Texas in general. You know, yeah. Texas in general is very diverse. And unfortunately, I don't necessarily see that represented in a lot of what I see coming from I guess I don't want to call it the majority of the lash industry, but you know, maybe mainstream, we could call it mainstream lash industry. But again, I think that's just a matter of alignment. I really do.
I think that, you know, people need to understand when it comes to your value, like people don't know when they're stepping to you for stuff, asking for a favor, collaboration. They don't understand your processes, especially when it comes to your email list, you know, the real estate that you do have, your team that you have, and how you guys are going to get the message out there. Because when you are set up like as a real business, there's a lot of other moving pieces that have to go into it. You know, honestly, since working with Tiana, she used to always say we need at least 6 weeks for anything, mm-hmm. any new conversation, any right. new thing that we want to do, at least 6 to 8 weeks. And, you know, after really getting into that habit, like another thing is just like people reaching out, and it's 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks before. And I'm like, whoa, like there's other people that have to be involved. We have to have a few meetings, touch bases, follow ups. And that's where you hold your value. Like me stepping away from my business and the people that I serve to be unreachable and miss meetings for 3 to 4 days, the amount of payroll that I have to spend, people I have to get in touch with, it's a lot.
Right.
So that's where you hold your value. And when it comes to even how Tiana holds her value, she has multiple kids. She has a husband. She's not just this lash. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Like she
definitely
has a whole life, people that she serves along with the industry people. So mm-hmm. I just feel like that is where you really, truly hold your value.
This is powerful. A lot of really good takeaways, guys. Thank you for sharing. Now, you are having these opportunities come to you, and we talked a bit about like actually having equity in those opportunities when they're brought to you. But I want to go on like the other side of it. What advice would you give to women of color who want to be seen in this industry or on Instagram? Like, how can they break through this wall so that they are seen and they do get the opportunities as well?
I think that they should just show up in the most professional manner at all times. Like, I'm gonna really go there. Like, Tiana sent me this video.
The video of
a lash artist, and she was African-American with her client, and they're like smoking a blunt. I'm like, this is the reason why. I'm just like, well, what am I doing all this for? Like, if that's where they want to take it, that's where it's going. So why we got to even be wrapped up? And it just kills what I am so motivated about. I'm like, oh, like, here I am out here room tooting around the town. Like, oh, we need equality. We need to be treated respectfully. We need opportunity. And y'all in the back seat of the car just blowing it up. Like, come on now. And I just feel like that's the stigma. That's where it comes from. Make sure you have your ducks in a row. Be organized. Be professional when you reach out to people. Follow up. Do what you're going to say you're going to do. That's really what business is about. Mm-hmm. And that's, I feel like that is the biggest part, you know, just as lash industry, when it comes to the lash industry, so many people don't have that business savvy. They don't have the team. They don't have the structure. They don't have the processes. They just don't know how to know it, the know-how at all. Mm-hmm. So it just, everything falls through and nothing actually gets done. And it just makes everybody look bad. So be professional, have integrity, and it's consistent. It doesn't happen overnight.
I think there's so much to be said that's kind of where my mission of like building beyond the hustle. I think it's so much of a mindset situation of, okay, well, I do lashes and make good money. Right? I make fast money. I make good money. Whatever your definition of good money is. Honestly, a lash artist who isn't charging much, they could be charging $100 for a full set, but doing, you know, 7-8 sets a day, $800 a day, mm-hmm. to the average human who maybe like myself doesn't have a formal education is not chump change.
Right.
However, there's lack of longevity. There's lack of, like we said, expert positioning. There's lack of, say, reaching up and being able to seize the opportunities that the wide part of the lash industry has to offer is limiting. So I think that's where a lot of Roxy's frustration comes from, is saying, and other lash artists of color that I've really talked to and chopped it up with, like, it's wanting to be seen and taken seriously in the mainstream of what the lash industry is offering. That is hard because like that video, for example, it's like everyone's doing a different thing. Everyone's catering to a different type of audience, and that's fine. But Roxy's point being, okay, well, we want to elevate. We want to get to the big money. We don't want the $100 full set, 8 of them a day. That's small in comparison to what truly is on the other side of organization, processes, and the mindset that holds you in this space of what I consider like a very limited space.
Yeah.
I used to be in that space myself.
You have to have a mindset of abundance, like, and be able to put forth the work behind it. You can't just have it. You have to actually be putting in the work behind that. And you look up and you've done it. You've made it. You made it to the top of the hill.
Oh, I love that. I mean, things are not always instant gratification. And I think that's become extremely difficult with how much of the not only hustle culture is out there, but this false pretense of passive income. I think it's really hard for us to just not want to just assume everything's going to be amazing right away and to put in that time and investment. Is something that I don't think is talked about enough, even though we try to talk about it all the time on this podcast. It's still not talked about enough how difficult the journey is to success and how it does take sacrifice. It does take dedication as well.
So true.
But one thing about instant gratification is a lot of times people get into this industry because they know they can make a lot of money very quickly. You know, it can build pretty quick, I would say. That oftentimes they didn't even consider what the goal is of their brand, of their business, their values, their pillars. What are your guys' takes on that?
I think that starting your brand, like we were just talking about this, Anne-Marie, starting your brand, it can happen, right? You can, I want to sell lash products and just start selling lash products. But what you have to understand about, you look at the wide beauty industry, say, for example, Fenty Beauty took the beauty industry by storm. There was a clear and defined set of brand values to what Fenty's objective to the market was. And for UA example, the sustainability element, here we are. That is a true pillar of what you're trying to achieve in the wide spectrum. And what people have to understand is that the more niche you can get with your brand values, the more powerful your message is, because that is the actual only thing that can set you apart from your competition. That's what people are missing the point of. Yes, we love a good lash product. Yes, we want glue that holds for a decade. But but what we're missing here is that there's a lot of glue that is going to hold for a decade. And there's a lot of lashes on the market. And there's a whole lot of the same stuff, same shape tweezer and a million different colors. What is the true thing that we are moving towards as a brand? And where brand is different than a business. A business is a business, and a brand is a part of a business. And sometimes even a brand can stand on its own. For me, it's getting, even if you're a small entrepreneur, get those pillars down. What are you about? Like, what are you actually in the game to achieve? And this is where your imagination, Roxy is a very imaginative person. Imagination running wild. Sometimes we got to catch it and we got to put it in the closet because it gets crazy. But it's like, get imaginative. If you were to be able to achieve a wider goal, like for UA, it's to say, well, we're not going to contribute to putting all these billions old tons of these plastic non-recyclable lash trays all up in the dang landfills. Well, right. That's a good goal. Is it a big goal? It's a big goal. That's a very, what I would consider an imaginative reaching goal. And that's really what your pillars are. DLU, it's diversity, saying, okay, well, we want to serve an audience that doesn't necessarily get the opportunity, get seen. Well, again, that's a big goal. Like, that's a reach. So those are the things that you, again, expanding your mindset, thinking outside the box and saying, if me selling lash product or if me just doing lashes can serve a bigger goal, what would that goal be? And I think that's really how you start developing your pillars to what is truly important to your brand. Because I'm telling you now, mark my words, the brands that have the pillars will be the ones to withstand what we would consider like the Red Sea of business, where it gets very crowded, it gets very intense with competition. You look at a brand like in cosmetics, I always use cosmetics as an example because our audience, they understand that. You look like a brand like one of the original brands, like Estee Lauder, right? You look at that and you're like, you're kind of like, if you think of what they're about, you're just kind of like, I'm not really quite sure.
Right.
Because they were a brand that came at a time where you didn't really got to be sure. You just had to look good. You know, you had to look good. You had to present well. You had to give maybe like an air of luxury and this and that. That's all good. That'll get you by. But you look at a brand like Fenty, who is by far taking a huge market share from a brand like Estee Lauder, and flip the script a little bit, you can tell the true pillar of what that brand is trying to achieve on a wider scale. So that's what I'm saying. If you want to be a disruptor to the industry, having brand pillars and being about what you're about and staying consistent with what you're about, consistency is key. You can't switch it up. Every old week, you're having a new pillar. That doesn't work. That's not the move, but that's truly what's going to allow you to disrupt and stand out in any industry that is becoming, I don't like the word saturated, but in truthful business term, saturating. That's how you're really going to stand out. We tell the DLU students that all the time because we're graduating all these kind of hundreds of students all the time. So it's like, how are you going to stand out?
Yeah, I definitely feel like, you know, since the beginning, one of me and Tiana's pillars has always been about our portfolio and how we come off on social media and the work that we put out, being able to show it in a high, clear definition way. And I feel like that is probably the number one reason why DLU's success has been so successful, because we have been able to consistently show up in that way in our marketing and coming out with fresh things and new ideas and just always staying ahead of the edge. And I feel like this is a pillar that we are forever going to be able to live on. And I'm really excited because, you know, we have been doing a lot of behind the scenes work and learning all the equipment and getting the equipment and that type of stuff. And I really love to see the stage that we're kind of going into, because from the beginning, me and Tiana were always really creative when it comes to photo shoots and quality and that type of stuff. And we have really just mastered, well, she has, I'm taking all the credit, but she has mastered the epitome of just everything that we've been wanting. And we can do it all in-house now. And it's just a wrap. Okay, it's just a wrap for everybody at this point, because we are really, really about to take over with this whole little set. I would call this the second phase we're going into.
I'll translate that back to the pillars, because she's going.
I loved it, Roxy. What, I feel inspired.
What one of the pillars actually is to highlight diverse beauty in the way that it should be highlighted. Because again, we see beauty shoots all the time. Not all the time. I mean, not to talk down on anybody's work because it's beautiful. That is maybe a little non-traditional. We actually have one this Sunday, and y'all are just gonna, we're gonna blow your caps back, because this is really a unique set of models. It's a unique concept. And again, this is really showcasing lashes in a diverse way, diverse lash styles, of course, because like we know, the lash design is limitless. You can do anything. There are so many options to that. But showing lashes on people that we think lashes are beautiful on, and really expanding that visual to not just the traditional lash client that we see featured so much in campaigns and, you know, different brands and stuff. Because we see people, actually, this model that both of these models are organic models. This one model that you'll be seeing from this shoot from this weekend, it was somebody at a birthday party. And here Rox goes, we're eating our crab legs. And I'm like, got a crab leg in my hand. Like, and she goes, oh my gosh, look at him. And I'm like, oh wow. And she gets up and just starts, hey, you're beautiful. Tell me your name. Have you ever worn lashes? This is what we do. We do create a photo shoot. And this is how this model has going to be coming to join the ranks of the campaign. So again, this is just the intention. We see a beautiful face. We see something maybe outside the box that we can do, that we can showcase. And that's really what we want to do. So yes, in Roxy's words, it's over. It's over, because we are really trying to just take a turn to maybe where the mainstream lash industry doesn't necessarily travel, a road less traveled.
I love that. I completely support that. Cheryl does the same thing where it's just grabbing whoever, you know, and she's such a talented photographer that she really just brings out the best of anyone when she's taking photos. And I love that. It's really nice to see those, I don't know, perfectly polished photos, right? But then, you know, the reality of what goes into that. And it's not always relatable, right? Like, I like my feed to be full of content that is like, beautiful, relatable, reminds me of a friend I haven't talked to in a while and I want to reach out to, reminds me of a client, reminds me of myself. I think that's a really beautiful thing. And I love your shoots. You guys are so talented with them. I cannot wait to see it. I want to come do a shoot with you guys.
Fun.
We'll do it.
Yes, we got to do that. We're actually going to do a shoot on Roxy. She hasn't had her own shoot for lashes, you know, just showing off different eye shapes, different looks, different looks, like, hello, especially for lash brands. I think for lash artists, it's so important. That's something that I'm always preaching, diversifying your profile and portfolio. But I think for lash brand, it can be really, really powerful to really put a lot of effort into making sure that your in, like we talked about, internal versus external, but externally, making sure that you are thinking outside the box, because like UA shoots, like these models are gorgeous and you can see their real skin. You know, they're not airbrushed to just a poreless. We love a beautiful photo, but we love it to look and feel real. And that's where Roxy and I have always struggled working with photographers and such, where it's like, it's beautiful, but we want it to be real. We want to be able to feel like we can reach out and touch it and really see the texture in the lashes and see the pores in the skin. That's what we think is beautiful. So, you know, I'm very excited for this next phase.
Me too. You know, it's like when you see someone's really laughing and their nose crinkles or like the little fine lines around the eyes or the slightly gummy smile, you know, all those things that's always being taken care of. But seeing that, and even some of my favorite photos I've had taken of me from Cheryl, like when they were like done being edited, color corrected, like you can still see like some of my acne. It doesn't bother me. You can tell that I have one smaller eye. You can tell I have a smaller tooth. You can see these things. You can see the chips in my teeth. And I love it. They're like beautiful because I don't feel like I'm being forced in a box of someone else's beauty standard. And so I know that your guys' pages isn't to make you feel like you don't fit in that box. Like we're not pushing you into looking a certain way or being a certain aesthetic. And I think that that's going to be more and more powerful as just time goes on. Honestly, I'm seeing this like switch when I went to the mall the other day where you can tell the brands who started by caring about diversity, right? You can tell the ones who are being forced to have to implement it. Can you guys talk a little bit about that from your perspective? Because I know it from my own and, you know, I'm just like white blonde hair. So I really want to hear from both of you.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely tell. We all know a couple of years ago, you know, people are getting canceled. People are getting, you know, called out. There was like a major move. What was it? The pull up or shut up movement that was really challenging big brands to show internally and externally what they're doing in terms of representing what we look like as a whole. And I think this is so like inherent to the U.S. because we are such a diverse country. It is extremely diverse, whereas other countries, you're not going to get that. So again, setting that standard of, okay, we have to show this because this is actually like who lives here. Like the people of this country actually all look like this. But yeah, you can tell when it's organic and when it's intentional to a brand because it's pretty consistent. And then brands where it's not, and you can tell like it's, you know, twisting your arm to show up. It's kind of not... Yeah, I really feel like brands, you can tell when there's a lack of authenticity in the way that they're moving towards the space of diversity. There was that whole campaign of pull up or shut up a couple years ago. And I think that challenged a lot of big brands to really have to be take an audit of what, like what they've been up to, like, well, you know, creative directors. I think that's really important to, and there was a lot of talk of that, like, oh, this creative director, there's all these leaked emails of them saying, you know, very unkind things, very prejudiced things that are not indicative of having a diverse, well-rounded brand representation. But I mean, in the cosmetic industry, you can definitely tell brands have for sure been challenged. And some brands are able to keep up with the demands of diversity and really reaching out there and sourcing models. I think even from our small perspective of like how Roxy and I source our models to big brand perspective, I think that is a huge challenge because these big brands are going through massive agencies. And if these massive agencies are not sourcing beautiful, diverse, unique models, then of course the big brands don't have beautiful, diverse models. So it happens in a bit of a tiered way. So us being a smaller industry, I think that there's really not much of an excuse.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Man, brand inclusion is, I mean, we all saw the Abercrombie and Fetch, you know, documentary on Netflix.
Not good.
It could be intentional, you know, it could be something that is planned.
True that.
But you never really know, but we're just saying that we see it. We're aware. We know. They made a switch. I was on there the other night looking at some.
The other night looking at some jeans.
Take it for what it is. We see it though.
I think that's the thing, is it's a constant journey. It definitely takes being open-minded and listening. and putting in the effort. Like you guys have mentioned, a lot of good points on this episode, making sure you're surrounding yourself with people who are different than you. That's something that's always been very like interesting to me, because like I know my experiences, I want to hear other people's. I'm bored just knowing what I'm about, you know? So I think it's also interesting because diversity does not need to be your main selling point. I'm going to try to say this as best as I can. Clean it up for me. So for example, like one of our main pillars is sustainability, but that breaks down into a lot of little sub pillars. Like we're making sure that the supply chain is not exploited. We're thinking about the full traceability, giving back to communities, amplifying voices, all of this, and then sustainability within your own business's success. It all kind of goes under sustainability. Yeah. And it's just something that we want to show. And I think that part of that is because our team is diverse too. That definitely helps. It was just very natural. It built that way. And that's something that I always thought was really cool and unique to see.
Yeah. And that's truly like the internal to the external. The internal part of the team, these things are valuable to the people that are internal to the team. And then you have these values are internal to the community that you serve. So now let's bundle that all up and project that externally. Mm-hmm. And again, imaginative, big picture things, because like you said, sustainability, supply chain. We've talked about supply chain. Yeah, the lash industry is full of sweatshop workers and exploitive labor practices out of Asia and all around the Middle East being horrifically exploited to support our billion-dollar industry and our six-figure, you know, chat. So it's like, okay, let's run it back, get imaginative about how we can do a little bit. Just a little bit towards that main pillar, and we are all going to be better for it.
I will tell you, it's extremely difficult once you start diving into that supply chain on that side. Thankfully, Cheryl set up like some really good relationships from the start, but it's still very difficult when you're wanting to actually innovate, make a new product. You're trying to find someone who will do it. You're trying to figure it out. It's very, very hard, and it can be quite expensive to really dig into that supply chain, to do those audits, to make sure that it's not just paying a higher premium for the products to be made, but that that's being given to the people, that they're not working too many hours. There's a lot of situations going on in China right now. You guys may or may not be aware, but you guys take a look if you don't know, those listening, and it's heartbreaking. And I know that that's never something that I would ever want to do. And it's something I practice in my own salon. So those of you listening who are trying to think of hiring staff, making sure that you're not just doing the bare minimum for them. Think about what is that living wage that a stylist would need to make if they come to work for you, and implementing it that way too. You know, because no amount of diversity that's shown all over someone's Instagram feed is going to take away the fact if you mistreat the people who work for you.
Yeah, it's the reverse engineering of it, of that big pillar saying, okay, this is where we want to be long-term, big picture. What is it going to take to get us a couple steps under that? Now, what is it going to take for get a couple steps under that? DLU, that was very important to Roxy, is always making sure that people are not being exploited in terms of the wages, in terms of the hours. Like, it is very important that children are not making lash products.
Yep.
I mean, I just watched that thing on Shein, the Shein clothes. They're worth $14 billion. Mm-hmm. Ugh. And like babies are in there and like children and people are working 90 hours a week and they can't. And if they make a mistake on a garment, it's like half of their wage. They're charged like retail price for really making a mistake. It's so messed up. And it's like, here we are, fast fashion, taking us down that route. And I know in the lash industry, listeners, you guys might want to be aware of some of the most exploitive practices are in tweezers. Tweezers and metalwork that is coming out of the Middle East. We are talking rough stuff, y'all. All those tweezer manufacturers you have knocking on your DM door. It is extremely unregulated. It is extremely harsh, brutal conditions for them to be able to offer you a dollar a tweezer. And that's crazy. That's crazy. So let's stop that, because it's not good. It's really not.
It's really hard, because it's definitely something I try to be mindful of, is thinking about, especially with fast fashion, is that if someone is making less money a year, they're kind of more pushed towards needing to purchase clothes that are less expensive. But I think it is important to just consider, where are you getting these? How often are you making these purchases? What items can just be staples in your like capsule wardrobe?
Yeah.
And then trying to do better where you can, as much as you can. And fashion's fun, you know? I totally understand that, even though I'm not fashionable. I think it's a really fun industry and things are always changing. But not only is it very unkind to the earth, but like you mentioned, some of these factories are extremely toxic to their people and their workers. Yeah. And that's nothing that you would ever want to see a loved one go through or experience yourself. So just being mindful, being open when it comes to that, it's a start. This is going to be something that I'm interested if we'll see get completely changed in our lifetimes, but we're fighting the good fight, honestly.
Yeah. Small changes. You know, we're not harping on people to just like change their life. There is an element of economic classism involved in what you can afford and the clothes that you have access to, the lash products you have access to. But I think we're speaking more from the perspective of, if you are starting a brand, if you are diving into purchasing from brands, being just conscious about this, like the average cost of these low cost metal tweezers coming out of the Middle East, Pakistan, especially, is, you know, $1. And, you know, we're seeing prices as high as like 40, 50, 60. I've seen $100 tweezers.
Same. I was like, whoa.
So we're like, okay, that's a reach as far as what is happening and what needs to go on. We're not saying don't make a profit in your business. We're just saying, you know, be conscious that this is what the supply chain actually looks like. And that's why with DLU, I know it was really important for Roxy to partner with a brand that was taking into account some of these smaller initiatives towards a big picture goal.
I don't want to say the lash industry become like the diamond industry. You know what I mean?
Literally. Where
it's like everything is marked literally so ridiculously. Like the people who are getting the diamonds, it's completely toxic. And
it kind of already is.
You're right. It's really, I think we've arrived. It's hard. You know, I'm thankful that Cheryl gives me the space to be like, hold up. Like, let's see what's going on. Yeah. Let's figure it out. And it's not cheap. You know, this has been an interesting journey with UA like reinventing and glowing up earlier this year, putting a pause on bad quality, figuring out, why is there bad quality? What do you mean the people who made our last trace quit? What do you mean this? What do you mean that?
They're on strike. Right.
Like, what changed? What changed where all of a sudden it was all happy, good times, and we're having a party, to all of a sudden like, whoop, you know? So
it
is very difficult, but yeah.
And it trickles down to the stylist, guys. This is the main bulk of this conversation. It trickles down to you as a listener and as a probably independent artist or as a salon owner. Looking at the prices that you're charging for the services that you're offering and being able to sustainably operate your business while supporting sustainably sourced products, it's a bit higher of a price point. However, you have the opportunity to profit. You have the opportunity to profit. We all have the opportunity to elevate the industry, because what we do not want, look at the nail industry, guys. We do not want to be operating pretty much nail sweatshops where no one's getting paid and no one is able to earn a living unless they are working smarter, you know, unless they are not working in one of these mega salons down in Texas. Here, we've got them on every block. We're talking 30 pedicure chairs, 15 rows on each side. And it's really bad. It's not good. We have a human trafficking issue in our TDLR. We actually have to take human trafficking courses, because in the beauty industry, people are being human trafficked. So it trickles down, you see, and being conscious of this and being conscious of how we price ourselves, how we present ourselves as a service in the industry of lashes, it all ties together in this ecosystem. If you want to undercharge, you are hurting yourself. You are hurting the ability for brands to offer the prices that support a sustainable supply chain. You are hurting the future workers, people that are joining the industry, and their ability to be paid a value in the prices that they are serving their their clients at. So it really is a full circle effort, and you just have to be very conscious of that.
I think so. You remember how it was always so rude to ask how much money someone makes?
Mm-hmm.
And I find that now, this might be controversial too, I think it's more important than ever to start questioning how much people make and to really look at that and really think about it. And it's not to come off shallow or anything like that. It's really just to question all these examples that you guys have provided.
Yeah, the gap in classism will only be widened if we don't take the steps to ensure our own living wages, our own industry's median. I know Roxy was volunteering and working with different schools to try and bring the DLU curriculum into public school systems and different, you know, programs that are serving like the youth and technical college programs. And they were quoting like the beauty industry at like, what was it, like $25,000 a year or something. They were like, yeah, you're going to graduate with your license and you'll be ready to make $30,000 a year. I'm like, what? Why are they saying that?
That's really interesting. I can't imagine that experience, Roxy. I would be like, huh.
I mean, honestly, I feel like people think the beauty industry is a joke because we'd be doing sketchy shit. But in the end, has hurt everybody. So like in my efforts to like really present well and want to come off like we have everything together, that stigma is still there and I have to kind of still fight it. So, I mean, I'm hopeful. I only got 10 years. I'm giving up 10 years. Like it or not.
y'all heard it here first.
It's not easy. And I am so thankful for both of you for making such waves in the lash industry, because I know that that's going to spread out in everyone's lives in more ways than you guys will ever know that you're impacting. So thank you for making the sacrifices, putting in the work, and pushing for the change that is so important that no one asked you to do, but we're happy you're doing it. Just wanted to thank both of you. And any way that I can ever show my support, you know I'm there. We're fighting the good fight at UA, however we can support
you. Are.
We're trying.
We love it here.
Oh my gosh, you guys are so sweet.
Yeah,
so
to you guys.
Oh, thank you. And I know that my favorite thing, I don't know, I have lots of favorite things, is that I know that you both would hold UA accountable. And your voices are heard and appreciated with us. So if we start acting crazy, you guys would tell us. You'd be like, hey, what the heck is up with that? Put us in our place. That's the best thing, is keeping people around you who will also keep you well aligned. I think that's extremely
important. Checks and balances. Always, always.
I feel like that really is what we do best
Well, thank you guys both for being on the podcast today. I wanted to give you guys space at the end of this episode to talk about what's next for each of you, and also your just like best advice to anyone who is just feeling so doubted or so small in our industry.
What's next? Well, we have a lot planned for next year, and that's kind of just what we're gearing into. A lot of filming, a lot of production, more collaborations to come. We are actually releasing a kind of like a magazine for our DLU alumni. So it's a free listing. We create like a cute little page and it goes into our alumni classroom, and we kind of send our students to where they can purchase or sign up for training, that type of stuff, just to continue that space of community. So if anyone's interested, feel free to DM us on our Instagram at DFW Lash University. And we can list you. You don't have to be in Texas. You can be all over. And we also are doing lives every week for about 30 minutes. So if you're interested, I would love to have you on. We can chop it up. It can be a topic that you feel like you're an expert in. You want to get the word out. And we can talk for 30 minutes.
I love that. That's a great opportunity. So I am partnering with UA on some things. I am partnering with DLU on some things. I'm just in everybody's business. and then for the greater good, I have some incredible resources. I have two courses with more to come. One specifically for new lash artists. That was something I was really passionate about. After I worked with DLU, we worked so much with these new artists. When I would meet them in trainings, oh, my heart. I'm just like, I need to tell you so much. So I created the ultimate guide for starting your lash career and your journey. we dive into all those juicy topics that we just cannot discuss in a 2-day training. Things like how to, you know, look for, how to be savvy when you're looking at opportunities, be it studio rentals, be it retail spaces, be it employment contracts. We even cover things like NDAs and non-competes. That's something huge in our industry. And so really guiding new lash artists on what to look for, how to start their clientele, how to start their careers and on the right foot. And then the Beyond the Hustle is a course for lash artists really struggling with elevating their mindset, way of thinking, way of going about their business so they can have a quality of life. I think that so many of us in our industry are just conditioned. We see this content, the hustle culture has seeped so far into the beauty industry that we feel like we need to just go all out in order to be successful, which we do have to go all out, but there's a smarter way to do it. So that is the course that really guides you through that. And both of those have an ebook. I have a discount code, Untamed Artistry, that is 25% off any of those courses or ebooks. So you can definitely take advantage of that. And I am working on a very special round of certification courses that we are partnering with DLU on. Very excited for that. That is going to be half digital content, half in-person experience with, of course, beautiful Untamed Artistry kits coming through, custom kits. We love that. And then a master educator program as well. My experience being an educator, Roxy's experience being an educator in such a way with the school has really inspired us. We know so many of you want to pivot into education. And I don't want people pivoting without having the knowledge that they need to be successful. So many exciting things happening. So many photo shoots happening. I feel like I have to get to work right now to just work on all of this. But yes, stay tuned for all the things.
Yeah. We're going to be done. We're going to be done by the time we go to Korea, though.
Yes. Bye. And we are going to Korea. And it's very exciting. And we, Roxy and I are doing a fitness challenge. It starts today.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes, we are going to get fit. We're going to climb a mountain in Korea. So it's very good.
I'm not signing up for that.
Yes, we are.
Roxy's like, I'm going to be at the spa, have fun climbing that mountain.
Climbing a mountain.
Thank you both again so much. Everyone listening, I will have all the information on how to connect with both Roxy and Tiana in the show notes, as well as the promo code, all the links so you guys can continue to learn more. Again, can't thank you both enough for being here today. It's been such a fun time. I wish we could just like continue and make this like a movie, like a 3-part series movie.
That's Roxy's dream. That's Roxy's dream.
No, honestly, like we're going to be on Netflix. Watch. We're gonna be on Netflix.
We need
like a hardcore competition show, kind of like how they do the makeup one on Netflix, where we can really be harsh and be like, "You suck."
Actually, like that. She wants to be like the Simon Cowell of the lash industry.
I'm seeing like that. I'm like, leave us with something inspirational. Yeah. Roxy goes, "You suck."
Or that you're really good. Well, it's okay. It's really to show the whole world what lashes could be. But they're going to be people that suck. And we have to show why.
It's like American Idol, you know? I think the inspiring words that we can give anyone listening is to, on that note, you don't suck. You might suck now. We've all sucked. How about that? We've all literally sucked. And we still suck at a lot of stuff. But I think the inspiring word we can leave you with is to just stay persistent. Stay persistent in your goals. If you want to be imaginative and reach for the stars, like, please do so. Because you're going to end up close. You know, you're going to end up a lot closer if you are reaching towards a goal that might seem big. It might seem like a huge challenge and an obstacle, but truly, truly, if you can stay committed to it, you will achieve it.
That's all for this episode of Untamed. Thank you so much for joining us today. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at untamedartistry.com. Don't forget to subscribe. And remember, as your study buddy, we are always here for you. Don't hesitate to send us a DM at untamed.artistry.